It's your
go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Sorry about the absence last night, but it was time well spent. You will hear the audio of the rally for green jobs and healthy mountains probably over the weekend. And what a rally it was. A lot of folks showed up, had a crowd of over 100. And on a warm September's afternoon in midweek, that's a darn good crowd on the Capitol Plaza in Charleston. There were some amazing moments. An assistant to Governor Joe Manchin showed up. He received one of those thick three-ring binders with the broadbacks. Yeah, he received one of those with a copy of the Community Bill of Rights statement and resolution in it from folks in the Coal River Valley, as well as over 9,400 messages in support of the Coal River Wind Farm. Your signatures and your messages were in there. You're making a difference. Still no blasting. As I said yesterday evening, it's not that we're going to win. We've begun to win. Because losing is not an alternative. So that's why I was gone yesterday. Now, tomorrow is a different story. Tomorrow is a football evening. And I was gone last week down to Kentucky. Missed that game of the boys. Won't miss this one. This falls under the broad general heading of family values and being a good parent. So I'll be a rerun tomorrow evening. But we'll be regular on Friday. And things will settle back down to normal as the new week comes along. I'll be gone next Thursday too, but the middle school football season's only 8 weeks long, so that's how many Thursdays I'll miss. And we're already two down, six to go. Now this is of course Wednesday. You know what Wednesday means? It's prayer meeting here on Head On. But I'm not going to ask the choir master to fire up the usual song, if you don't mind. I think we've got a different song. I want you to cast your mind back, if you will. Well, there are probably very few of you who are old enough to cast your mind back this far. But you know probably a parent or a grandparent who remembers this and remembers the circumstances under which they heard it.
Rudy Valley again, stepping perhaps a bit out of character in singing a song from Americana.
song that has taken its audiences by storm, which may be explained by its theme, which is both poignant and different. Brother, can you spare a dime? They used to tell me I was building a dream, and so I followed the mob. When there was earth to plow or guns to bear, I was always there, right on the job. They used to tell me I was building a dream, with peace and glory ahead. Why should I be standing in line, just waiting for bread? Once I built a railroad, made it run, made it race against time. Once I built a railroad, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once I built a tower to the sun, brick and rivet and lime. Once I built a tower, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once in khaki suits, gee, we looked swell, full of that Yankee doodle dum. Half a million boots went slogging through hell, and I was the kid with a drum. Say, don't you remember they called me Al? It was Al all the time. Say, don't you remember I'm your pal? Buddy, can you spare a dime?
Why do I play that? Well, I imagine the answer is obvious to most of you. That was the anthem of the Great Depression. Brother, can you spare a dime? As our buddy Lottie notes in the chat room, written in 1932 by E.Y. Yip Harburg and Jay Gorney, performed on that in that version by Rudy Valley, great star of the time. Brother, can you spare a dime? And that's our prayer meeting. That's our prayer meeting hymn for this evening. Only it's a little different in 2008, don't you think? It's not a working man or a woman trying to raise children in the Great Depression, trying to scrape by. No, it's a bunch of silk suits at AIG, or Lehman Brothers, looking for a government bailout. AIG's risk-taking cost you $85 billion. Of course, you now being that the government took an 80% stake in AIG today, we the people, you know, in order to form a more perfect union, promote the general welfare and all that. Hey, welfare! Oh, we own 80% of AIG now. AIG, they're an insurance company. I wonder if maybe, reckon an insurance company owned by the people of the United States could maybe be turned to more patriotic American purposes than covering up dummy loans and bad mortgages? It's coming to me. Healthcare! I'd say $85 billion would go a long way toward buying you and me and every other American a nice little chunk of health care. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but, you know, it's a thought. So that song, though, I had to bring that up, though, because of these incessant prattlings by old 894, John McCain, Sydney, and his statement that the fundamentals of our economy are strong. I want to offer you a quote. My friends, the fundamental business of the country, that is, the production and distribution of commodities, is on a sound and prosperous basis. John McCain? Herbert Hoover, a day after Black Thursday, October 25th, 1929. You understand? You know, we've made a lot of comparisons. We've said, you know, he's McBush, he's McSane. No, baby, learn the timeline. It was Warren Gamaliel Harding and Calvin Coolidge. And if you look back at the history, what you really get is, in one fell swoop, instead of Harding and then Coolidge, what you get is Bush and Cheney. Bush is Harding and Cheney is Coolidge. And they were followed up because the American people were being kind of stupid back then, too. They were followed up by Herbert Hoover, who said on the day after the stock market crashed that the fundamental business of the country, that is, the production and distribution of commodities, is on a sound and prosperous basis. Well, John McHoover keeps running around the country saying that the fundamentals of our economy are strong when the fundamentals of our economy are going in the toilet. So I just did a little bit of historical perspective there because, you know, I'm all about the historical perspective. Over at Think Progress, they note that John McCain has described the economy's fundamentals as strong at least 18 times in the last year. Don't believe me? Check it out.
I think we're in difficult times, and we got to sort out the subprime lending situation, and we got to get our spending under control, and we got to do that. But the fundamentals of America's economy is still very strong.
This is a tough time we're going to go through, but I still believe the fundamentals of our economy are strong.
I don't believe we're headed into a recession. I believe the fundamentals of this economy are strong, and I believe they will remain strong. This is a rough patch.
I still believe the fundamental principles and foundation of our economy is strong.
In our economy, I think our fundamentals are strong, and America's greatest days are ahead of us economically.
The underpinnings of our economy are strong. Nothing is inevitable. But unleashing the forces of the free market and capitalism, and we will restore this economy because the fundamentals are strong of our economy.
I believe that the fundamentals of our economy are strong, so our fundamentals, I still believe, are very strong. And I don't know whether technically or not, because it is kind of a technical matter, whether we go into a recession or not.
Fundamentals of our economy are strong.
Let me also begin by saying the fundamentals of our economy are strong.
But I want to to convince you of my belief and my firm conviction that America's economy, the fundamentals of it are strong. The fundamentals of America's economy are strong.
But I am confident that the fundamentals of our economy are strong and we will recover and continue to lead the world in every objective measurement.
When we come out of this recession, and we will, because I believe the fundamentals of America's economy are good and the long-term prospects of our economy are good if government behaves in the proper fashion.
Americans are trying to figure out how to keep their homes by making these loan payments. And you see it all the time, and you see it every day, and I don't have to tell you about it. But the fundamentals of our economy are strong.
I have a fundamental belief that the fundamentals of our economy are very strong. Very strong.
I believe in the fundamental strength of our economy, but I also know full well how tough these times are.
People are frightened by these events.
Our economy, I think, still, the fundamentals of our economy are strong, but these are very, very difficult times.
You know, I hope the old 894, John McHoover's handlers are keeping a close eye on him. Because that old bastard's liable to bust out and start doing the Charleston and break a hip. Good God, the fundamental business of the country, that is the production and distribution of commodities, is on a sound and prosperous basis. Thank you, Herbert Hoover. Huh! Well, at least we got a piece of an insurance company. Yeah, I always wanted to own me some insurance companies because I never thought much of the people who owned them in the first place. So we got that going, which is good. But I ran across all that earlier today, and trust me, work with me here. This all ties together. And it made me think of something. I've told you in the past how a young man with the last name of Kincaid was a prosperous businessman out the road here once upon a time. Had himself a sawmill and a post office. Had himself a general store. He was one of those small business owners that Dim Leader likes to talk about so much. The Republicans screwed him right into the ground. And yet, as long as he could, you know, that whole stick with it as long as you can thing sort of runs in the family, I guess. We sort of bulldog things. But as long as he could, he kept the store open and kept extending credit to the locals in the neighborhood so that they wouldn't starve. Their husbands were out of work. Babies were crying. He knew there wasn't a snowball's chance in hell of them ever paying back their credit accounts. But sure, you can get 10 pounds of flour on credit. Your credit's good. Sure. Sure, you need a new pair of shoes? We'll put it on your account. What's that? Need a box of shotgun shells? Going rabbit hunting, are you? We'll put that on your account. And he did that until his own creditors ate him alive, thanks to Republican economic policies. I, by God, don't remember the Great Depression, but I remember people who remember the Great Depression, and it's about damn time we all start finding some people who can tell us those stories. Oh, glory. If I drive down the road a couple of miles, there's a little joint that sells some really, really bad food. It's called Tudor's Biscuit World. Dear God, their biscuits are just little lumps of lard with a little bit of flour thrown in them. I mean, my cholesterol and triglyceride numbers go up just driving by, and they're bad. You know, if they were good biscuits and they were that way, it'd be okay. But damn, you could send a box to Sarah Palin, and she'd probably be able to play hockey with them. So, don't get me started on the brown bacon grease gravy. Bacon grease gravy. Help me, Jesus. And, you know, once in a while I'd go get breakfast for my dad once upon a time from there and bring it back to him. And, he liked a couple of eggs sunny side up. Boy, these are baby eggs! Little teeny tiny things. Little BB-sized yolks. Big biscuit to sop that little bit of yolk, don't you think, boy? But on the wall there at Tudor's, and I'd be lying if I said that we didn't have a copy of it, too, there's a picture. It's one of those panoramic photographs, and it's of a mine crew about that time, hereabouts, before there was a UMW, but back when dedicated men like my grandfather and great-grandfather and uncles and cousins were trying to bring the United Mine Workers to this area. And it's, like I said, it's one of those panoramic photos. And you can see the tracks going into the mine. These are all coal miners, and they're just off work. Nobody's gussied up. Don't know why they decided to take the picture. Golly Mountain Coal Company. But the tracks are running in front of them, but because it's a panoramic camera, it looks like the tracks are curving. It's kind of confusing, really. And there's a whole bunch of them standing there, and I'm probably related to half or three-quarters of them. And to one degree or another, every man in that picture is black. The African-American miners are black, and the Scots-Irish miners are black, and the Italian miners are black. Everybody is black with coal dust. Because if nothing else, going deep into the bowels of the earth in search of coal is a great leveler. Race don't matter just a hell of a lot down in that hole. And if a roof caved, or if there was a slate fall, nobody was asking, oh, don't let that black man, not that word, don't let that black man lift that rock on me, I'm going to lay here and die racist. Ho! Uh-uh. My dad told me stories about how you'd see these stunning acts of heroism down in the mines. See a man lift a rock, and he did it once himself. See a man lift a rock that no human being could lift by himself. But one human being would lift it because another human being was under it. And it didn't matter whether that man was black or white, Scots or Italian or any other ethnicity. The United Mine Workers, whether you know or not, our good friend Jeff Biggers documents this in the United States of Appalachia. The United Mine Workers was the first national or international union that from its very foundation, from the instant it was created, was an integrated union. Again, because down in that hole, down in that dark, ain't nobody white. So I looked at that photograph about a week or so ago. I was in a hurry to have some biscuits for the family after the apple butter making down in the down up Rock Creek Holler, and I didn't have time to make any myself, and neither did Agnes. So I ran off and got some of those hockey pucks. And while I was waiting, I stood there and I looked at that photograph. Black men, white men, young men, older men, Kincaids and Davises and Bartrams and Welches and Skaggses and all kind of folks. And they're standing there intermixed and intermingled, and nobody's giving the stink eye to anybody else. And that is the community that this community is the perpetuation of. And in fact, the mingled blood of black and white runs in a whole lot of folks in this community. Now, you all know that my very favoritist book is a little tome by Harper Lee called To Kill a Mockingbird. And you know why I love it so dearly. Talk about it a lot. You read it and you love it, as I did, and you never quite know what the universe has in store for you. I read it first in the ninth grade in high school in Alabama. And I read it with horror and sickness in the pit of my stomach, and sometimes little moments of uplift and joy. And in the ninth grade in a high school in Alabama, I also read it and occasionally went, whew, thank God I don't live in a day like that. Looky here. We all go to school together now. We've made such progress. And I have read and reread that book. Read it in law school. I've read it just for the fun of reading it. The music of the language. And I've enjoyed it each and every time and learned something new every time. But like I said, you never know what the universe has in store for you. Because if you recall the book, there is a segment in there. In fact, it's a significant segment of the book where little Scout goes off to school the first day. Meanwhile, her daddy has been assigned, not by choice, to represent a young African-American man named Tom Robinson, who has been charged with a murder he did not commit, a rape that he did not commit. The rape of Miss Mayella Yule and the Yules who live out next to the county trash dump. Scout doesn't understand, no matter how patient and explaining Atticus is with her, Scout doesn't understand why it is that when she goes to school, Cunninghams and Yules look at her and call her a nigger lover. And she balls up her fists on that first day at school and whomps the living hell out of little Walter Cunningham. You never imagine where things are going to take you. Well, two nights ago, Monday evening, I put our Barack Obama sign in the yard here. Today, we took that sign out of the yard. Because my youngest gets on the bus in front of our house every morning, and for the last 2 days, she has had to endure being called a nigger lover. Yeah. In 2008, about 80-some-odd years after that photograph of those black men and white men standing together at the drift mouth of the mine of the Gauley Mountain Coal Company was taken. And in this community, where a great deal of black and white blood flows together in the veins of the very children with that filth flowing out of their mouths, my daughter, for the sake of our politics, gets called a nigger lover. And this was serious enough. You know, let me just say one thing. And I've said it before, I'll say it again. I hope you enjoy this program. I hope you get something out of this program. We clown around, and we fool around, and we mess around, and we have our fun from time to time. But I do not and never have deemed it to be my job to entertain you or to be an entertainer. I leave being an entertainer to folks like Flush Flimball, who every time he gets called out on the carpet says, "My friends, I'm just an entertainer." I want it understood that I'm not an entertainer. I'm liberal. I'm progressive. For most of my life, I've seen, I've combated, I've dealt with in myself and in others some degree or another of racism. And this makes me about as sick as anything I've ever experienced. And it's not doing Agnes any good either. You know, she went back to looking after the children a while back. And I had to mute the mic there for a moment, just so you could, because I had to find out something. Our eldest just came to let us know that my son-in-law has just gotten done picking up tacks from the driveway. For nothing more than stating our political preference for a presidential candidate. Nobody puts rocks through the windows of people who have McCain signs in their yard, throws tacks in their driveway, or calls their children little fascist lovers. But we, well, you know what we got. And like I said, Agnes left the program to go and be a mother and stop, you know, because these are three very important hours of the day. But I asked her to come back in here this evening, and she wanted to, just to let you know where she stood and where what this is doing. And frankly, she has had the greater contact with our children regarding this issue, and to tell you what it's doing to them.
Well, folks, I'm not here for entertainment either. And you just really don't want to mess with me tonight. I get tired because there is no justice. There's no justice for our children. There's no justice for your children. And if you're deemed to be different or soft, or if you like somebody that's different from you, then they're going to beat the crap out of you, or they're going to call you names or do whatever. Now, I'm an old woman. I don't care. But their parents aren't brave enough to come up and say something to me. They're more than brave enough to do it from a moving vehicle or to have their children say it. And, you know, I've always loved children. Up until the last couple of years. But there's children I really don't like. My political preference is my business and nobody else's. My children's preferences will develop as they grow older. I took time away from the show just because of the way other people are. I don't care what color their skin is. I don't care what their sexual preference is. I don't care what they do for a living. I do care when you make it personal. And it's personal. And I'm in a bad, bad frame of mind. Mind you, I'm not saying that I'm violent or anything like that, but I am in a bad frame of mind. When you go to the schools and you see teachers abused as well as other students because the children who want to be bullies, for whatever reason, get by with it, and they come back and they do it some more. You want to sue your school board? Good luck with that. I hope your attorney works for free. Most of them just wink and pass on by. There are no freedoms anymore. You're not free to express yourself. If you're not part of the crowd, then you're part of the problem. Well, I guess I'm a problem. And that's fine, because if I catch somebody doing something to my home, I don't care if they're moving in a vehicle or not. If I can get to them, I hope that they believe in God, because I'm going to take out the middleman for them. And if you can't raise your child to keep their mouth shut and keep that internal monologue going for themselves when they think hateful thoughts that way, then you're not much of a parent. Now, I've tried not to be an absentee parent and raise my children. So they have to suffer the conduct of others who are either too ignorant. No, I don't even want to say ignorant. They're stupid. They're just plain downright stupid. Or they're just not there. Bob's a nice guy. But I'm not a nice girl. And I play rough. Now, I took the sign out of our yard mainly because I know it's not just my child getting picked on. We have interracial children in the community. They're beautiful children. If our little Sarah's getting that, and it's not just Sarah, but if she's getting that, what are they getting? So instead, you know, are these parents supporting McCain and Palin?
Yes, dear, they are.
So you support a female that can't even figure out what her job's going to be and runs around claiming high-risk pregnancies and an old man that even his own side can't figure out what he did during the war. That's a really, really great party. There are no party lines when it comes to children.
Over at BartCop today, there's a wonderful little graphic of that, you know, blue sticker. We're going to get real familiar with that blue sticker. Instead of McCain Palin, it says, Geezer and MILF. And then under the line and the star, because Obama is black. This is, for those of you who think that, we'll pull this out. I don't know if all of you understand how far up, how high, how intense. I don't know if you know what the grade of the mountain is we're climbing. Now, I'm sure that Agnes has already had a little talk. I'll have a little talk. And she and I have had a talk together. My fear is, and we'll just work this out on the air, dear.
Oh, joy. Thank you very much, Bob.
My fear is that in removing that sign, it may get worse.
No, I told
because
you.
Because it empowers the bullies.
No, my philosophy, you hide in the bushes and you cut them off at the knees. I'm tired of playing.
We don't have any bushes.
Then I'll grow them.
And our children can't do that.
No, and by state law, we're not allowed to be there to protect them.
But let me make something abundantly clear, because it is Wednesday, and it is prayer meeting night, brothers and sisters. These little children that have said these things to our daughter, by God, they're in church every time the door opens. Where do you reckon they've heard that Obama is a Muslim? We've talked about this before. Yes, indeedy, them some Bible-believing children.
Well, hold on a second, Bob.
Using that language on our babies.
In that case, if it's all about Bible believing, then shouldn't Palin just bow out gracefully? Because isn't a woman supposed to remain silent according to the Bible, and let the man do the talking?
Let her remain silent and ask any questions of her husband when they get home. But this isn't. You know what? I'm having a hard time even tying this to John McHoover and Sarah, I can see Russia from my house.
It's not political. It's racist. It's down to the very dirty core of how people think. I mean, let's face it, folks. It doesn't matter if you're a different color. If you're a female, you better shut your mouth. You don't have any right to speak unless you're just parroting what you're told. And as many people out there that can argue about that, well, when push comes to shove, we see exactly what the truth is. Maybe that's my truth. That's just my opinion.
But it's moments like this. I've thought a lot. One of the questions that has occurred to me, I have thought a lot about how we could best reinvigorate this community. Agnes can tell you it has occupied a little bit of my idle thoughts these days. Things that we could do to bring this community together. Things that we could do, you know, because I just spent a week hanging out with a bunch of community organizers. Things that we could do to make things better. But you know what? And please, I want to be understood completely on not just because these are our children. But had I heard this about anyone else's children, it would have occurred to me to ask whether this community is worth saving. This just in from our listener David in South Carolina. Racist slurs were spray-painted across a large Barack Obama presidential campaign billboard alongside a heavily trafficked stretch of U.S. 23 in Pittsfield Township sometime overnight Tuesday. U.S. Secret Service is investigating what now appears to be two threatening letters against Obama that were received in Livingston County, Michigan. The billboard was 10 feet tall by 50 feet wide. Unfortunately, this is squishy, wishy-washy journalism, so they won't tell us what was written. But if you tune in to the Head On Radio Network, by God, I will tell you what was said and what was written. Because you know what? This is the America that is going to feel like it has received affirmation if John McHoover is elected. Really, it is.
Well, you know, it.
And then the snakes will really come out of their hole.
It amazes me that it comes down to this. That bigotry, small-mindedness, and just plain stupidity can win over everything else. How can people settle for something that won't change their lives but make it worse just because they don't like someone's color or race or their belief system? You know, one time I said that you can't look to other people to be your heroes. You have to be your own. Either lead, follow, or get out of the way. Well, I'm down to where I don't want to follow anymore. I'll just go ahead and lead. Wonder what kind of trouble that'll get me in. But I saw a lot of people last night that they kind of renewed not just my spirit, but my belief that there's some ability there that I can do some of that. Wonderful people. And there should have been more people at that rally. But people would rather...
I think you've identified something, Agnes. That's the stark dichotomy that we face. A determination to go forward into the future together and make a future that we can all live in that we witnessed last night. There was enough good spirit and enough good soul and enough good works and enough good intentions there that there was enough of all of that good for 10,000 people.
Not just that,
but then the sobering up comes.
Look at the pain and anguish those people have endured.
Oh, yeah.
Just for living on a mountain. And it's everywhere. If we all don't come together, then we're lost.
These are the stakes. And I tell you what, let's take a moment. Don't go anywhere, Agnes. Let's take a moment and go to the phones. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. This is Malin from New Jersey.
Hey, Malin. How are you?
Hi, sweetheart.
Okay. This really came home to me personally, this story, because in my high school we had about 2,000 students back in the 60s, and it was a regional high school. And we only had one black student in our school, and he was my best friend. And when we came from my grammar school, before we had gone into high school, I always thought that everybody knew Bill and they treated him as a regular person. But then when we got to high school, I would be walking in the hallways with him, with maybe some other students from our own town school. There was like five towns that went to that school, and then I would get during the day they would maybe recognize my face, some of the kids. And they'd say, oh, there's that nigger lover. And I know I shouldn't say the word, but that's that's what they used to say. And what I can't get over is that how in this day and age can this still be happening? I can understand this back in 1956, but this is just so unbelievable. And that's mostly what I was calling about, because it really hit me really so personally when I found out that this had happened today, because I just couldn't believe it still happened. And look how many years it's been since those days.
I know. It was shocking to me. I recognized. I mean, shoot, we know what's here in these hills. But still, it was shocking to me. And then to find out, and I can't leave the studio here, Malin, to go find out what's this business about tax in the driveway.
Oh, yeah, we have problems like that. I can't put my signs out anymore because my signs get taken at night. So I just put them up like a week before the election, and then I take them all down as soon as, like, when it gets dark, you know, after time changes, it gets dark early, so I take them all out of the ground because they either get destroyed or they get, you know, taken away and you never see them again. So I have to go to the county seat to get more of those, things, you know, to put up. So it's quite a drive. It's like 25 miles to go to the county seat to get them. So I try and take care of the ones that I have. You shouldn't have to do that. That shouldn't have to be the thing. You shouldn't have to worry about that. That's what's just so awful.
That's true, Malin. But
our things that we put out in front of our house, we shouldn't have to worry about them. And I mean, it's not like a Halloween where, you know, they're, you know, throwing eggs at your, you know, mailbox or something like that. It's not the same. So.
Right. But people that were in high school doing that, sweetheart, they breed their children to do that every once in a while.
Oh, I knew the kids that were saying these things back then.
Right.
And I knew that I tried to say to myself, they don't know any better, because they come from poor families and they're like white trash and they really don't know any better because that's all they've heard at home. So I just always said, well, I'm going to look at myself as the one that knows better, and I'm going to like turn the other cheek.
But see, that's one of the things, because I understand that I did that for the longest time, but
I
don't have any.
Doing it.
I just don't have any cheeks left to turn, and
I don't believe that lasts for so long, that old thing. And I know it's from the Bible, but I've become a little less of a Bible enthusiast than I used to be, and I know what I say doesn't make much sense sometimes, but I just wanted to let you know that that's what
you make plenty of sense, Malin.
What happens, you know, when you, and he has passed away since, but that's probably what makes it more personal.
No, I understand that, and I think a lot of people, if you remember back. You know, a lot of people understand this. It's horrible that it still goes on today, but it's what people are basing their decisions on, everyone's future. And it's not just theirs, but they don't want you to have your opinion. And you can't live in peace.
I always sort of feel when anyone comes into the house, you know, should I have my, you know, pictures out of Bill, who was my friend, whether or not they're gonna be someone who will. Well, I don't let many Republicans in the house. I have to let my family in the house.
I understand.
But you know, they don't. I try to keep them out too. So I go to their house instead, and then I just keep my mouth shut. And if I do say something, I say it at the very end, and then I step on the gas to just get out of there. But what I did call about originally when I walked in from shopping was I was going to comment on the bailout of this industry, of the insurance industry and the banking industries, and I thought that it was Has anyone ever once asked a question? I've been listening this morning to the MSNBC television program on, you know, they have the Joe, Morning Joe or Cup of Joe. Whatever
right, right.
Called. And I didn't hear anybody ask all these different people, what they got the bailout, but are these people that are working for them and are directly under these people who are the CEOs, all these months, have they been socking the money away? And how do we know that they have not left with the majority of the money, which just leaves it with a useless company, you know?
And that is the $85 billion question, Malin.
And I just don't know why someone can't say it. I know they say greed, but that's still not the answer. Because greed could imply anybody. You know, I want to hear it, you know, like the so-and-so from Lehman Brothers, you know, secretary to the down to the personal secretary down to the vice so-and-so to the vice so-and-so. They got so much money out of this whole deal. And I want to hear the federal government tell us these facts, because unless that happens,
I don't think the federal government can give us those answers. I mean, there are a host of answers. Let's start with the philosophical ones. Instead of bailing out a bunch of, you know, why can't we take care of the people who are due to be harmed by the mismanagement of this company? Why do the people who mismanage this company, why are they getting a break? Why are the people who ran this company getting a bailout instead of getting an indictment?
Well, they're getting, from what I understand, they're getting 2 years to pay this money back, with a little bit more interest than they would like to pay. But I haven't heard anybody say anything about having more stringent rules set up so this won't happen again.
The reason you don't, you know, McCain has said, well, you know, we need regulation in the future. This man has stood up time after time after time and said, my friends, the market will correct itself.
Well, we both know he's an idiot. I mean, you know, he can't, you know, that man should not be used as an example. I mean, he should be used as an example for someone that shouldn't be president. But
I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, but do you realize, Malin, that AIG will pay less of an interest rate on this bailout package, they'll pay a lower interest rate than some young person trying to pay off their community college student loan debt?
And every dollar to them is worth, it's a lot harder to earn than what their dollars were to earn.
So, sure.
You know, that's pittance to them.
You know, but we can't do the pitchforks and torches thing in America. Because, you know, that just wouldn't be nice.
Oh, I think it's buying on me already, but I haven't mentioned those words that I won't say anymore. But, you know, on that subject, but that's what I originally called for. And then you started talking, Agnes came in and started talking about the sign. And, I just took it so personally when I remember people saying, me in the hallway, I could hear them. There's the nigger lover, the blonde. He's the nigger lover, and you know, it just.
That's up north. Once again, confirming my thesis that this is not limited to south of the Mason-Dixon line.
This was 1966, but
it's an American phenomenon.
Changed that much since 66, but I know when I finally graduated that I think. When the Vietnam War was going on, I think when I graduated, it still hadn't ended, but I think that there seemed to be a little bit more leeway with people back then. And since then, it seems like things have gone back to their merry old ways. Just to me, it seems that way anyway. The hippie generation is not in charge. Well, it's in charge, but it's gotten older, and maybe it's gone back to the ways.
No, I don't think. No, because the people who are running the show, Well, you know, George Bush hated hippies. This is that generation. But, you know, these are not the people who were sitting around singing Kumbaya.
I think that there were probably a lot more hippies than they ever imagined, because I was very, very conservative looking, but I was doing my best to be exactly the opposite of whatever the government told me to do. So, since I was number 18 for my year, and I was lucky that I had quit school, and I would have gone, and I'd probably be dead. I probably would have died, but I had to go back to school because I was ill for a little while, and I went back to school so I was reassigned a different number. So, but it makes me in a way feel guilty because I wasn't what I really should have been, but then I went through the hospitalization and all that, so I guess I paid my price. So I paid my dues. But anyway, that was what I was calling about. And
well, Malin, it's always good to hear from you. Please don't be shy. Ring in any time.
I don't call in very often, but I haven't been drinking since May.
Well, congratulations, if that's by choice.
But today I have a little bottle of Jack Daniels, and if I hear something as upsetting as I did tonight, I just a little snort. And,
well, don't let us assault your sobriety.
It gave me confidence, but it won't happen every night. It's just upsetting so much.
Well, thank you. Thank you for listening, Malin, and thank you for sharing your thoughts, because...
Yeah. Okay. I'll try to get rid of this Jersey accent, but it's so...
Nah, I love that Jersey accent.
Yeah.
You take care, okay. Malin.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye now. No, I love Jersey accents. I love the flat Midwestern accents. I love all manner of accents. That's the beauty of the language and the beauty of the culture. Lord knows that the Southern accent is the background music of my soul. That's what and the hill country accent, the Appalachian accent. It's music to me. But God, the music, it's nothing but flats when it's used for the kind of stuff that our daughter's been having to listen to. Let's keep it going. Hi, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, brother.
Hey, what's up, Albert?
That's a tough one. That's a gut wrencher right there, what you just said. So, I'm glad Arno is on its way. So, but you know, it got me thinking. You know, I don't know if I would have taken the sign down. I'm a little bit more confrontation like that.
Well, so am I.
Sign bigger, and I would make it bigger. And I'd put a camera on it, you know, not for nothing. You know, it doesn't matter the police, you know, if you want to use that. You know, police can't, you know, it doesn't matter.
But see, Agnes just came back. She left the studio to go and find out about these tacks. Some of them were a half inch long, and some of them were like bulletin board tacks. Just perfect for a little barefoot.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, buddy. West Virginia's lost. You know, West Virginia's not going to be going to Obama. You know?
Yeah, and that kind of gets under my skin, too, because the Obama campaign punted West Virginia.
Well,
our Jefferson Jackson Day dinner is coming up soon, and, you know, that's every state with a Democratic Party has a JJ dinner. Ours is none different. And in a political year, you really want to get somebody to the JJ dinner, even if it's not the candidate themselves. You want to get somebody to the JJ dinner that'll really light them up. Now, I didn't figure that we would get Michelle Obama or Barack Obama or even Joe Biden. But I was kind of hoping we might get Brian Schweitzer from Montana, because that man could stand up and we could probably identify with him. But no, Albert.
Lieberman?
not quite as bad, but, you know, no fire in the belly and just sort of one of those micromanagers. We're getting Tim Kaine. Hoo-wee! I'm guessing they're not going to have any trouble selling tickets. And probably have a few left over. But the Obama campaign controls that, you see, Albert.
Yeah, so.
Hillary. What a perfect place for Hillary. But you know, all the liberals, all the progressives, all the Democrats and decent human beings, I guess we've been left for dead. And it doesn't much matter if my little girl gets that kind of treatment. So, you know, pardon my pessimism that, you know.
Yeah. Well, Wisconsin's going to be a battleground, so they say, but I don't even think that's going to happen. Tell you what, though, I wouldn't be putting that. You know, that's a real bile twister right there. That's disgusting. I'm sorry. I'm sorry they got people like that over there.
Ain't your fault.
Yeah, I know it isn't, you know, but that's just disgusting. Well, that's what they get. That's what they are, buddy. Now they're attacking, you know. So,
well, you know, we know them for who they are. And let me be if I wasn't already, let me be abundantly clear here. My daughter's been taking hell over the Obama sign, but we brought a sign home from the rally yesterday, and it's, by God, going to stay in the yard. And it just says, yes, wind. You know, it's a direct satire, if you will, of the yes, coal billboards that we have to put up with. And I put that in the yard this morning. And we got the tax in the driveway this afternoon. Because, see, there's a bunch of Fockers. There's a bunch of friends of coal in this neighborhood, too.
Nice. We got a couple McCain signs, but every time it seems one pops up, like 50 Obama signs pop up. Southwest Wisconsin, I just got to say, is on lockdown. That's all I can really say about that. I know there'll be spots, but and that's sad. You know, you got people out there that don't understand. I mean, heck, they charge more for wind. You know, you start getting into a wind economy over there with all those mountains and hills you got.
Oh, you think about the jobs that go with maintaining a wind farm? You know, it's not just some guy who goes and hoes the tulip patch around him. These are high-tech, good-paying jobs.
And, Bob, just let me tell you, buddy. I mean, I know I've maybe said it to you guys before, and just the people maybe haven't ever heard this or haven't ever seen one or maybe heard about a picture. No, when you see, like, they come down past my house constantly, and they are literally the size, they're almost the size of ICBMs. They're like Saturn V rockets, and it's only pieces of it. I mean, it's steel. It's trucking. It's everything. I mean, it's just unbelievable how much actually is going to wind up going into it, not only the generators and the, you know, there's so many different ways that wind would not only to build them and to maintain them, but heck, God, think of how many houses you won't have to rebuild because there will be that much less flooding and, you know, the headwaters out where you guys live and, you know, it's just going to save it all the way around. And, you know, that's wind out by you and solar where it can be and, you know, the whole green revolution deal, which actually, you know, not for nothing, I think I kind of had to laugh a little bit at that strategic move by the Democrats today. Or yesterday, whatever that was, when I heard that, I gave a little chuckle. You know what I'm saying? Where they're talking about, oh yeah, sure, you want to drill, go ahead, drill.
Yeah.
You know, I thought that was a nice move right there. And, you know, I understand, like, you know, how you have to look at the battle because of how it's coming to your house and stuff like that. And, you know, not for nothing, brother, but you guys are behind enemy lines. You know, I mean, you got to look away.
Yeah, and that's what I'm getting at. Behind enemy lines and left for dead.
Well, I sense some aid. So, you know, I hope it gets to you ASAP, and you know, you can enjoy a little and relax because you know nobody needs this and nobody needs that kind of baloney with their kids. I know you raise your girls right, and I don't know if you guys got the time or whatever. I'm sure your kids are smart enough. How old is your daughter?
This one is 11.
All right. She's a Kincaid. She's smart enough. Have her drop out of school, get her GED, and enroll her into college. That way, by the time she's 18, she'll have a master's degree.
Yeah.
Hey, you could do that. That's a loophole. If they can pass that GED, boom, they go right to college. I tell you what, they like prodigies. You should test them once. Hey, kids, this is your test. To take it. Boom.
You know, I don't know. I mean, she's in gifted right now, and I don't know if I want to push the envelope that hard. But it's a darn fine idea.
That's what I'm doing with my kids. I'm just going to bypass high school entirely.
I'm pretty sure my 14-year-old could take the SAT and make it into several colleges in West Virginia right now, and you know, get an admittable score.
What you got to deal with? I mean, what if you're going to have pimples and everything else? Might as well be in college. I mean, might as well be for a piece of paper that means something. That's all I'm going to say on that. I mean. If it's going to be like that, I'll tell you, if my kids do that, I guarantee you, if my kids do that, they can then come home and for 2 years do nothing. Just sit around, I don't care, every day, eat Cheetos, eat peanut butter with their fingers, I don't care. If they do something like that, I'll put them on vacation. I'll do whatever it takes if they do something like that. That's all I'm going to say.
You know, one of the differences here, though, Albert, is that, you know, I idealize To Kill a Mockingbird. I really, really do. And in that wonderful book, when Scout gets called that, she balls up her fists and beats the tar out of Walter Cunningham.
Yep.
Well, we've raised nonviolent children. My one daughter's initials are MLK. And we've told them there will be no fighting. And there will be no brawling. And so, instead, it just hurts. And, Lord, hurt my children, you know, I'd rather take the ass beating myself.
Yeah. Yeah, I can definitely relate to that. I mean, I haven't endeared it yet, but I can...
No, it's coming. It's coming. Stuff. You're not safe in Wisconsin, Albert. You are not safe
I know,
in Wisconsin.
Buddy. I know my neighbors, they're black, and you know I share a driveway with one of them, and they sit there and spit at the driveway as they drive by. But you know, those people are like, you know, they're herpes, but we're taking Valtrex or something. I mean, like, they're herpes simplex just viruses. That's all they are. And sure, they're out there, and you know, you have a bit higher concentration of them, and you know, but. And, you know, they're found everywhere, man. They're in New York. I mean, I'll never forget I was sitting there driving in New York, and I know people, you know, have certain people think certain places a certain way just because New Jersey or New York, you know, they think, oh, KKK guys don't exist there. And you'd be dumb to say that because they do. And, you know, those kinds of people are everywhere. You know, it just so happens that, you know, out where you live, you know, they think because they're in the hollers and they're in the hills that, you know, that they're safe and nobody's going to see him, but
the thing, like I said, Albert, the thing that really, really crawls all over me is this is not how it has always been. This kind of behavior, I mean, sure, to a certain extent, some people, yes. But this is retrograde motion in this area.
Yeah,
this is the backwardism that you get after the Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan and
yeah.
George Bush and George W. Bush and the whole Republican values revolution.
Yep, no doubt. Oh,
you
no,
can, you
no
know,
doubt.
They may look all solid and upstanding and patriotic and American, but you can thump it, and it is hollow, Albert. It is hollow.
It's hollow, and it's got clay feet and a lead head. And, you know, that's what's going to wind up happening. And, you know, I'm telling you right now, you know, they're going to – I just finished watching JFK. And I know it would be hard to believe, but I never even watched that movie until just recently. And then it became a point that I didn't want to see it for a while. And I just actually finished watching it. And, you know, and, yeah, it's, you know, it did have some interesting information in it. It did sit there and show you kind of, oh, how nasty and dirty these kinds of things become. And I know I'm bringing it up because you have to bring it up. The parallels, I know you don't even like putting it out there. I don't care. You have to bring it up because I'll tell you what, that's what these people are hoping and praying for, and they're going to lose, Bob. I mean, this is, I know you always hear me saying this, but I don't care. They're going to lose.
Can you imagine living a life, Albert? I mean, just, you know, this is one of those a mile in their moccasins kind of moments. And see, this is the difference between liberals and conservatives.
Yeah, empathy.
Well, no, I mean, where right-wingers get behind a microphone and they scream about the danger to our country and, you know, oh, yeah, you know, he's a closet. Do you think he's a closet Marxist? I'm about to sit here behind this microphone, Albert, and ask and actually try to understand what drives these people. Can you imagine? Can you imagine, Albert, living a life that is so pathetic and so hopeless and so hollow that you will let the most precious right you have be determined by skin color? Can you imagine, Albert, living such a hopeless, pathetic life that you're afraid, that you fear, you don't fear a presidential candidate who shares all the traits of every other Republican who's ever destroyed this country, but instead you're scared of a man who's a Democrat because he's got different pigment than you? What a pathetic existence.
It is. And I often think, you know, especially you're behind enemy lines, you know, you're almost like a colonist to an alien world sending back reports.
I feel like Edward R. Murrow going, this is London. You know, damn. Not that I'm Edward R. Murrow or anything, because I'm not. I'm just a hillbilly elitist. But no, that's what it feels like sometimes. Because I know that there are people out there who are hearing my voice, who live in communities where people speak to each other on the street, where they can go a year without ever hearing that vile, filthy word, and where having a political sign in your yard is not a reason to target somebody's home. Those dumb bastards don't understand that I'm a well-armed liberal.
There you go, buddy. I mean, I would put that sign out there, too. I mean, put a couple signs out there. Let them know, you know. I remember my uncles had that sign, and I always liked that sign. Forget about the dog. Beware of owner.
Well, my favorite was the sign we had back when we lived even further in the country. The little smoking pistol that said, we don't call 911.
Yeah. Those found here at night will be found here in the morning.
Yeehaw! Albert, good.
I got to just say one thing.
Sure.
One thing I want to uplift. I want to uplift your spirits. I went down into the Democratic Obama headquarters here we have in Viroqua, and went in there, and there was an old lady back there making buttons, and she's sitting there making buttons, and you know, we started talking a little bit, and I was asking her about those coal dump signs and coal waste dump sign and this and that, and she wound up telling me that she's a Republican. And I was like looking at her, and I'm like, oh, you know, when you hear someone's a Republican, you kind of want to jump on them with your teeth bared and, you know, like an alien on the neck. But I sat there, and, you know, I was like, oh, really? You know, I mean, my liberal popped through. And I sat there and I said, what made you decide to, you know, support Obama? And basically she just said Bush. And, you know, and we started talking about it a little bit, and she was, you know, she was a Republican that had voted Republican her entire life. She was 60-some years old. She's a woman, you know, and a Republican. And I mentioned she's a Republican. And we're sitting there talking, and I'm like, well, did you hear this? She's like, oh, no, don't tell me. I don't want to hear anything negative. I was like, oh, you know, I can really appreciate and admire that. And, you know, just to let you know, Bob, I know there are people out here like that. There are Republicans that are going to be voting for Obama because they're not consciously unconscious. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. And I don't want this interpreted as a pessimistic, oh, we're screwed conversation.
No.
That is not what I'm saying. I'm trying to point the way to the fact that the hill is steep, the labor hard, and the journey long.
Yeah, well, you know, if you saw what happened on Wall Street, you know how long old Albert's been rambling about that, huh? And, you know, now it's starting to really collapse. They can't keep this illusion up any longer. And it's not a joke, people. It's serious. You know, they're even telling you, this is bad. I haven't seen anything like this in my entire life. Oh, but Mr. Greenspan, you've been alive since the 1400s. I know, I'm telling you, it's the worst. You know, it's going to be bad. And, you know, these people, I mean, Barack Obama, man, I think he's the only one that's going to be able to live long enough.
Well, look, when John McHoover's...
McHoover, indeed.
Leading female surrogate, Carly Fiorina, former CEO of Hewlett-Packard, when that woman comes out and says neither John McCain nor the Sarah Mussolini are fit to be to run a corporation.
Yeah.
By the way, the big hook came off from stage right and went right around. She ain't on the campaign trail no more. And of course, Governor, I can see Russia from my house. Immediately came out and said, well, I'd like to think of myself as Alaska's CEO.
Oh, Lord. You know, well, look at what even the people out there in Alaska are just like, no way. I mean, no. She lost. What has she lost? You know, she's a circus freak show. She's a sideshow. You know, now people see her and they're like, yeah, well, you know, that's not really two heads. That's just a styrofoam, you know, glue on. You know, that's what it is. These people, that's all they got, you know, and I'm telling you, the only way they're going to do it is by starting World War III, and if that happens, shit, who cares? Just love your family, have a good night, you know, drink some beer, and just, you know, watch the snow, because that's all it's going to be. If that's how it's going to be, that's how it's going to be. But they're going to lose, it's going to be beautiful. I'm sorry you guys have to deal with this crap, with these retarded troglodytes. Buckle the hatches, put your signs out, keep your ammo dry, you know, get a camera, you know, do something like that, you know, even put a little sign, you know. You know, you can't let these people know that show that you're afraid of them. You know, and I know they're going to go after your kids, which is the most horrible thing. You know, not for nothing. You know, I know.
Yeah, but that's a real sleazy tactic, though. Attack the kids. I mean, I know it's middle school. Middle school's a hell of a place to have to deal with at a hell of a time in your life. But this is one of the favorite middle school professors. The teachers, but they call him prof. Is constantly railing at his students. It all begins in the home, and you know what? He's right. But those little chicken shit. The purveyors of racism and hatred, won't say anything to me, take it out on my kids. Won't say anything to Agnes, take it out on her kids. Bunch of damn cowards throwing tacks in a driveway, sons of...
Yeah, that's some dirty, dirty, scummy stuff, and, you know, not for nothing. I mean, it sounds juvenile, and I hope it is juvenile. I hope adults aren't behaving in such a way. Even though apples don't fall far from trees, but I'll tell you what, you know, and because it is juvenile, you might have some toilet paper, or you might have some rocks or eggs or something, paint, or, you know, just look out for that kind of garbage, because that's the kind of people they are. But I'll tell you what, most likely, if there is a kid, they ain't voting, you know, and not for nothing, you know, hopefully.
And, you know, their dumbass, ignorant parents may not vote either. They just know that they're dirt poor and scared to death of that brown man.
Well, that may be, but that doesn't give them, you know, if that's the case, what kind of excuse is that to give? Hey, you know, this might be an enlightened opportunity for you to educate their parents and for 5 minutes, because I know you can speak, and you can speak the tongue of those people. That's why you're in that land. And, you know, you might want to just, you know, you get your video camera out and just, you know, man, if you can get a picture of some kids doing or somebody doing that. You know, not only legally, but you can, if it was a picture of a kid, you could sit down. I'll never forget. This is one of those things that kept me out of prison. I was 11 years old, and it was Halloween, and in New York, when it's Halloween, you know, kids think it's time for anarchy, and it's time to throw eggs and shaving cream and all that stuff, and, you know, beat each other with flower socks, all that kind of stuff. So we were doing a lot of vandalism stuff at the school bus stop, and I thought I had gotten away with it until 3 days later when there was a knock at my door, and a guy asked to speak to my dad, and he sat there and he showed us a tape called Vandals. This guy had sat there and recorded everything we did, and then made a copy of the tape for each of the parents, and then gave it to them. You know, and I tell you what, I was kind of embarrassed at my behavior. My parents didn't know that that's what I was doing. I was just being a kid. You know, and sure, you know, I might have been a kid. I might have thought, oh, man, that guy's black, or, oh, man, that guy's gay. And, I was a kid. I was stupid. You know, but I'll tell you what, you might be able to sit there, and the parents might say, you know, I don't want my kid acting like that. You know what I'm saying? Like, once you get in, you know, one-on-one, you get these people out of that group. You know, you pull them out of that group think, and they can say, no, you know, honestly, I don't want my kids acting like that. You know what, now, not for nothing, now maybe I'm going to vote for Barack Obama. Who knows, Bob, this may be the spark you need to turn the state blue.
It may be, Albert, and the other thing that I would like for it to do, it should serve as a warning. You know, the reason we pulled the sign was not because of us, it was because of our kids.
Yeah.
But you know what, just be alert. Be alert.
Oh yeah,
I hate this squishy journalism, like the story from Michigan, from Pittsfield, that David in South Carolina sent along. It's time, you know. I don't like saying that word. I don't like saying what my kid was called. I feel like I need a shower now because I think it's come out of my mouth two or three times, and I just feel sick. And I hope people will forgive me for using it, but there's no way to get around it. And you know what? When you say disturbing epithets were used. You know what? No. No. Dadgummit, Albert, no. It's time that we stopped with this milquetoast journalism, and when somebody spray paints a 10-by-50-foot billboard with racial expletives and epithets, by God, the only response for a responsible journalist is to print what the words were. America right. needs to be confronted with the racism that is absolutely running rampant through this political scene.
I agree. I agree. That's my rail against political correctness. And that's, you know, it's when you can't see how ugly it is, then you don't pay attention to it. You know, when you call Iraqis that, you know, are at a wedding that get bombed into bloody little ribbons of flesh and bone, when you call them, you know, collateral damage instead of, you know.
Or, you know, most of the time we call them insurgents. The insurgent bride wore white.
Yeah. All right, come on. That's why I agree with you. Right?
The insurgent groom wore shrapnel.
Exactly. And, you know, these people are, you know, sometimes the old days, you know, not to be too not too much of a concern, but sometimes the old days kind of, they had a certain allure to them. And it, like, if you sit there and you're reading the paper, like, you know, if you think about it, the reason that the civil rights movement, you know, kind of got on its own is because of how crass and out there the words and the language that was used.
Yeah,
know,
but
that happened today.
But the good old days appeal to a certain segment of the population, as any good old days do. They are made up and they didn't really exist. But there is a segment of this population that wants to go back to the Leave It to Beaver 50s, because in the Leave It to Beaver 50s, the people who had sex different than how these intolerant asses believe that they should have sex, well, they were in the closet. And people who were a different color than these asses thought they should be, well, you know, they had a different school and a different drinking fountain, and they didn't get to stay in the hotels. And those were the good old days for those repulsive people. And just one last little thing. Did it ever occur to you, Albert? Did it ever occur to you that the 50s, that these right-wingers want to go back to, was a 50s that was prosperous because 33% of this country belonged to unions, and there was a burgeoning middle class because of unions, because of labor organizing, because of a rise in decent pay? Oh, no, but don't tell them that. No, it's because we had family values, and we left an empty chair at the table for Jesus to eat dinner every night. Glory.
Yeah, right. Man, come on. That's nostalgia for a day that didn't exist, but if it wasn't for the 50s, there wouldn't be no 60s. And it's like, that's what I'm saying about the good old days. That's why it would be nice to see some of those aspects come back, because when something's ugly, we need to see that it's ugly. people need to be able to be shown, I mean, almost like showing a dog, see this? This is no. Don't poop in the house. I mean, this is the kind of thing, you know, like, you can't just sweep everything under the rug because eventually, you know, the rug becomes uncomfortable to walk on. Just like what you're going through right now.
Well, it's like a yellow in the chat room's pointing out. These neocons all are forever carping and complaining.
Oh, you liberals want us to be politically correct.
What they mean is they want the freedom to refer to people of color with the N-word in public and not be shamed or castigated for it. And they, by God, want to look at someone that they perceive to be different and call them the F-word without anybody looking sideways at them. They want to be able to publicly enjoy their bigotry and their racism.
Then let them. Because all that will happen is they'll be ostracized. They'll be ostracized even cleaner.
Kind of depends, Albert, on where you are.
But I would still rather have, if somebody had a problem, I understand, you know, like, if somebody's going to come mess with your sign or your daughter or whatever, you'd rather certainly have them come to your house and knock on the door and tell you something to your face. I'm not saying it has to be violent, I'm just saying
Say it to me at the gas pump. Say it to me in the grocery store.
Yeah, exactly. Say it. What do you got to say?
Let me see, you know, let me know what kind of filth I'm dealing with. Albert, I got to roll on, brother, but
always
a good one. Take care.
Stay up and look for the box. See you soon, brother.
All right, will do. Will do.
All right.
Okay, we've been at it for almost a... Where did half of a show go, for heaven's sakes? We've been at it for about an hour and a half now, and I'm going to take a little break and fill up the iced tea glass. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. You know that. You're listening to radio that's about as upfront and candid as you're likely to find. You're listening to The Horn, and I'm Bob Kincaid.
just the way it is. Some things will never change. That's just the way it is. That's just the way.
Resist playing that. About 28. Can't do the math now, see? About 28 minutes before the hour, halfway through the program for this evening. And this topic, or any topic, is, as is always the case, right out there for your discussion. We can go anywhere that you want to take the program. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. Or if you want to save us a little bit of a buck or two or three, who knows, you can dial 304-658-3333. Let's do go back to the phones. Oh, okay. And how about that? So I guess we'll move on. I don't feel particularly comfortable just going on about this for three blessed hours. You know what the challenge is in this nation. You know the lurking beast that hides not very deeply under the surface of this country. But I did want to let you know that, by God, it's real. It's very real. And I had a wonderful email from our pal Cindy out in the great Northwest. She said, it sounds to me like you two need to put on your Sunday best and go to church on Sunday morning and read your prepared speech to the folks in the pews. That is, if they still allow you to witness in the church. No, we're not much for, no, this community doesn't go in for standing up and saying your piece. No. And what's more, not to be too much of a nattering nabob of negativity, thank you, Spiro Agnew, what you would hear if you went down to the local Baptist Tabernacle or 12 is you would be told, well, you know, it wasn't my precious little lumpkin child. We don't have a racist bone in our body. You know, some of our best friends are, you know, like Obama. That's what you'd get. But let's continue on the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, this is Juanita.
Hey, Juanita, how are you?
I'm pretty good. How about yourself?
Well, you know, I've had better days, but it was certainly an interesting one.
Yes, I know. I'm really sorry about that. And I know that my mother's heart was special.
Agnes wants to resort to self-help. I think that's the proper phrase.
She wants what?
She wants to resort to self-help.
I understand, and I can really.
She wants to rip relate. Off. She wants to rip off somebody's head and down the neck.
Yeah. Yep. I can understand. And this is a dangerous situation. A lot of places like down here is, you know, getting all kind of trouble, get all kind of things thrown, and all that stuff. to say something about The View today.
Go ahead.
That Wolfie said, and I'll see if I can say it the way she said it. But she was saying about all this stuff that we as taxpayers are bailing out. And she said that, like that AGI or whatever, and all the others said now, they're taken care of, aren't they? Said, why can't our government spend some of that tax money and take care of the people?
Well, and that's I guess the Republicans would call that class warfare, Juanita.
Uh-huh.
But the fact but that's the ultimate question.
I thought that really was said at all.
why not make it possible for these people to stay in their homes instead of making it possible for the CEO of AIG to hang on to
right.
his mansions?
That's what she was talking about, yeah. And I thought that fit in very well with my viewpoint.
It's exactly how I feel.
And but like you said, that would be terrible. That would be welfare.
Yeah, except for the little there's the we're kind of doing the welfare thing right
but
now.
But you know those people, what are those companies? Those people. I think they need to have their pap smears done. Or their prostates checked. You know,
yeah, with a rusty knife.
Yeah, that's one thing Randy Rhodes has said. She said, I'll call them a person when they have to have a pap smear. And, you know, that is the most ridiculous thing, to call them a person.
Well, thanks to Union Pacific versus Santa Clara.
And they can sue, but we can't.
Oh, sure.
So I guess we're not persons.
Well, but, you know, and even flesh and blood people, there's, you know, if you've ever read George Orwell's Animal Farm, you know that all animals are equal, but some animals are more equal than others.
And others.
because if you notice today, the teaching has caught on. And Sarah Palin is going to have her government refuse all subpoenas relating to her illegal firing of the commandant of their state police.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've been thinking about it. Tell me what you think of this, Juanita.
Yeah. And it's okay for them to tell lies.
Sure.
That's fine. They're wonderful.
But let me know
They're
what
the
you,
best.
Oh, let me know what you think about this. Kind of as an act. Now I can't guarantee when it's going to happen, but every so often, you get a subpoena to come and sit on the grand jury or the petit jury or magistrate court jury or some such, mainly because they draw that from people who have driver's licenses and or voter registration.
Yeah.
So with that being the case, I've thought very seriously that should one of those come into the House anytime soon. That I'm going to have to write a little letter, and it's going to have to say, Dear Judge, this letter is in no wise a matter of disrespect toward you. I have the greatest respect for the judicial system and for your integrity as a jurist. However, I cannot honor your subpoena, because it has come to my attention that subpoenas are now optional in this country.
Oh, yeah, right.
And just wait for him to come get me.
Uh-huh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I had a subpoena one time to give a deposition. I got it that evening. They want me to go to 50 miles away early the next morning to be there at 8. And they called me on my job, wanting to know why I hadn't come.
Oh, yeah, and they will, because, of course, you know, you're not, well, the... All animals are equal, but some animals are more equal than others.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe that's the kind of, maybe that's, you know, granted, we have to talk about these things. We have to point out the hypocrisy of just flouting the law. And that's a proper topic for this program. It's a proper topic for journalism. However, maybe what we need is a broad-based movement across the country. And, you know, if I had millions and millions of listeners, maybe this would start one. We need a petition that says, no matter where I live, I will not respond to any jury subpoena except to say that I refuse it based upon the conduct of Karl Rove, the Harriet Myers, Josh Bolton, and Sarah Palin.
Yes.
And that as soon as they are punished for ignoring their subpoenas, I will be happy to honor the subpoena.
Mm-hmm. Right. You know, I think a lot of us, there's just even one of those people, especially the one with the initials KR.
Yeah.
It would just do our heart so much good. I think a lot of us would be healed of a lot of different things because we've been let down so dadgum much.
Well, we have, and frankly, you know, that old saying, this is a law, a nation of laws and not of men.
Yeah.
Has been spat on by this administration and frankly by the Repig Lickin' Party in general.
Yeah. And I know when we first took over, in Congress in 96, they would get up in both houses, especially the representatives, and just say, eating out the way it's supposed to be done. You know, they'd do that in the hearings, you know. They weren't head of it anymore. This is not the way it's supposed to be done, you know. Like, everybody was talking was stupid except for them. And they would get up and just gone or something. I mean, some have said as much. And what a boring place this would be without us. Because I think we're the true Americans. We're individuals. And we're thoughtful, like you, trying to think about why would those people do what they're doing? Why would those kids? And, you know, that's the way we are.
I know.
And, it's just, and we're diverse, and we criticize our candidates. They're not like, ten horn dogs?
No, we actually hold our candidates up to higher, in some instances, we hold our candidates up to higher standards than perhaps a candidate or an office holder ought to be held.
Uh-huh.
I fully admit that I bring my idealism to bear on in my politics.
Yeah.
I want an America that wants to work to be better, not an America that looks around and says, well, everything's going to hell, but we're still the best nation in the world.
Uh-huh. I want our nation to evolve. There's so many things that could be, like, just for instance, that wind of power. What a wonderful thing that would be. And that could be just the beginning. We've got still got so much potential in this country for unique and different ways of doing things, you know, the way to run our town. I was thinking about that little thing I went through a while back about the building codes and all. And I was thinking, and I have a neighbor that's going through a similar situation. And I was thinking about, that is so unfair because they're picking on, basically, this is not a well-to-do neighbor. This is kind of like maybe lower middle class with a lot of retired people, a lot of people like me living on Social Security. But they're all Republican too. And you ask one of them a question, one of them gets you one answer. They don't know what their own rules are. But I was just thinking, I've been contemplating, you know, maybe getting some kind of a suit up against them, see if I can get some people to go along with me. Because you got to do something. I mean, this is ridiculous, them picking on you, you know, and, you know, it makes you feel like you're going to lose your home, like they're going to come and get you because you didn't do what they said, charging you over $750 a month. You know, it's just awful.
Well, this is all the product of a phony baloney market, isn't it, Juanita?
Yeah. Oh, I could just go on. There's so much stuff. And just like, instead of wasting all this paper, Like in businesses, there's just so much paper just thrown away. Why can't we grow hemp and for that kind of a paper? You know, and why can't we grow hemp? But no.
No, no. If we grow any hemp in this country, Juanita, the next thing you know, the whole country will be whack out of its mind on the LSD or the heroin. Lord, they make me crazy. They just make me crazy, Juanita.
Yeah, my son's friend that was in Iraq, you know, and he was a career. He was I call him medic, but it's a corpsman with the Marines. And he's having so much trouble, you know, with flashbacks and all kind of things like that. And physical problems. And they've lost his medical records when he was in service. And I've heard that that's happened to quite a few of them. And I said, you know, now, I truly believe if Barack gets in and we have a Democratic Congress and all, I truly believe that it's going to be better. Maybe it won't be exactly what we wanted, but it's going to be a lot better. I think people will be surprised. I think people in Iraq will be surprised at what the real American heart is, because they surely haven't seen it.
I've come to the point. I agree with your optimism and I agree with your hopes, Juanita. But I'm sorry, I'm just in a place this evening where I'm wondering what the real American heart is.
Well, yeah, and I told you I was going to tell you about those things, Juanita. I really believe that God is watching what this nation's going to do, and how many people are going to let prejudice go.
Well, you know, Pastor,
that is a big thing.
Pastor Hagee said that Katrina hit the Gulf Coast because the drag queens were going to have a parade in New Orleans.
Uh-huh.
And apparently God missed, because that was the part of New Orleans that didn't get the worst of the damage. But then you got to turn around. I mean, you know, and if they can play this game, I can play it too. A Category 2 storm, all right? And I don't mean to sound insensitive, because it's hell down there. A Category 2 storm, not a Category 3, not a Category 4 like Katrina was. A Category 2 storm hit the Texas Gulf Coast. You can't swing a dead skunk in that part of Texas without hitting some fundamentalist church. I mean, they're all churched up.
Isn't there where Hagee's church is in that area?
He's in San Antonio.
Oh, okay.
But isn't Joel Osteen in Houston?
I don't know.
Didn't God draw a bead on Joel Osteen?
I don't know.
So, I mean, it's fair. I mean, the sauce for the goose is sauce for
there's
the gander.
There's some others. Believe me, there's some others there.
But apparently, I'm hearing something via email here that's kind of disturbing. Cindy wrote in to say, or to ask, did you know that there's a no-fly zone around the Texas disaster area? Seems they blew
it.
They're
not letting the people back in either.
But she says it seems the Bush administration blew it again, and there are bodies floating in the water by the hundreds more, and they don't want it on the news.
Oh, Lord.
Because, you know, if we don't see it on our electric TV box, it isn't real.
Right. Well, you know what happened some years ago when we have Disney World right close to me where I live in Central Florida. And, you know, they declared, I think it was Gay Pride Day or something.
Yeah, I'm familiar. I mean, I know about gay pride events. And
okay. Pat Robertson predicted that because of that Florida was going to have tidal waves, earthquakes, and hurricanes, and I think tornadoes, too.
What, he didn't get to the frogs and locusts and the rivers running blood?
And did you know it wasn't but just a little while I don't know, days or so forth, we had a hurricane, and it went straight to Virginia. And guess where he is?
Right there in Virginia Beach.
I'm
absolutely.
I'm not kidding you.
No, there. You know, I don't go in for that divine retribution thing, but.
Well, I think if he's a Christian, he ain't supposed to be doing that kind of like praying.
Well, you'd think that these
for the death of some of the.
I don't know.
You know, justices.
You know, yeah, there was that too, and I don't know, but what? Maybe they spend so much time thumping their Bibles that they never get around to reading them. But any fool can read what happened when the children of Israel were trying to get out of Egypt. That last curse, you know, God whispered in Moses' ear and said, hey, here's how it is. Whatever he says is going to happen to you, I'm going to make happen to him. And this sure does look an awful lot like that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I hope you can play that song by Johnny Cash sometime that I sent you the lyrics to.
Uh-huh.
It just hit me so strong one day. And when I heard it, and I thought, yep. And especially about Rush Limbaugh for some reason. But I'm being Cassandra now, and probably nobody's going to listen to me.
You'd be surprised.
But you know what? If there is a God, and I believe there is, I really do. I think he's getting tired of being lied about. I just, he's been lied about a whole lot. He's getting tired of it. People call him themselves big deal Christians. And, I don't know.
I know. I know. Juanita, awful good to hear from you.
I'm sorry to leave you on.
No, that's okay. I got a follow up to that. I think people will get a charge out of.
Okay.
All right. You take care, Juanita.
Okay.
Bye bye. I got this in from our chat room moderator, Lottie. Dateline Galveston, Texas. Check this out. I mean, this fits right in. This couldn't have happened at a more perfect time. We won't have a live program from Peter Godbold this evening, so I'll take up a little bit of his slack here, too. Comes out of Galveston in the wake of Hurricane Ike. And the article notes that, and if you've seen the photographs, you know, well, not the ones where they didn't allow people, the journalists, to do journalism, you know, where they can't. You know, it reminds me the way journalists were treated down on the Gulf Coast around Galveston. It reminds me of the way Arch Moore, the single most corrupt human being ever to occupy the office of governor of the state of West Virginia, the way he treated journalists after the Buffalo Creek disaster, when that sludge dam collapsed and roared down Buffalo Creek Holler, indiscriminately wiping out the folks who lived along that creek. Horror. Horror. You know, Arch Moore tried to keep journalists from getting in and doing their job, that is, documenting the story. Well, apparently the government's doing the same thing because there's some bodies a-bobbing in the water. And they don't want to, you know, they didn't like it when that got, whatever they see that they don't like, they try to remedy the next time through. That's why you don't see, that's why there aren't any Ed Bradleys in Iraq. You know, Ed Bradley did a seminal job reporting from Vietnam for CBS. Well, there aren't any Ed Bradleys in Iraq, and there's nobody to see the bodies, and you don't see soldiers running, carrying a wounded comrade back to safety. There's none of that footage out there. It don't happen. The same theories being applied to the Galveston area following Hurricane Ike. But this story, and again, I remind you of what I mentioned in our conversation with Juanita earlier. Pastor John Hagee, you know, friend of God, he said that Katrina was sent to New Orleans because the gay people and the drag queens wanted to have a parade. I'll stop that parade, thought God. I'll send them a Category 4 hurricane that will take advantage of the poorly designed levees from 50 years ago. That's what I'll do, thought God. Yea, verily, let me smite them in their iniquity. Hence, Katrina. I mean, you know, that's what he said. It just is. Yeah, welcome to prayer meeting for those of you tuning in late. Well, you just kind of got to go, you know, do one of those trip, classic W.C. Fields triple takes when you see this story. Galveston, this from 365gay.com. Galveston has been virtually destroyed by Hurricane Ike. Thousands of homes were reduced to matchsticks, and there's no power or water. People who fled in advance of the storm are being warned not to return. Oddly enough, there's been no footage, by the way. This isn't in the story, just an observation. There's been no footage of that hateful old beast, Barbara Bush, off in Austin, where so many Houstonians fled, saying that the Houstonians are doing quite well in Austin. Now, our only worry is that they may never go home. I don't know why that would be. Because after all, you know, she couldn't get to Houston fast enough. I think they kind of live there part of the time. Couldn't get down to the Astrodome fast enough to say, "Why, look at all these poor poor colored people from New Orleans. They're living on cots in the Astrodome, and they're doing quite well. And well, we're just afraid that they might want to stay." But she didn't do that. So anyway, back to the story. People who fled in advance of the storm are being warned not to return. Nevertheless, a small number of people remained in the city during the storm. Emergency workers are on the scene. And for them, Roberts Lafitte. Remember Jean Lafitte, the pirate from the late 18th, early 19th century along the Louisiana and Texas Gulf Coast? Well, he kind of ranged all over the Gulf Coast, but that's neither here nor there. So there's a bar in Galveston called Roberts Lafitte. And just so you can know, Roberts Lafitte is a gay bar. It's not ambiguously gay. It's not curiously androgynous or anything. No, it's a gay bar. And it is it's a popular gay bar. You know, Galveston sees a lot of tourism and so forth. It's a popular gay bar. The bar owner is a fellow the locals call Big Mouth Robert. And Big Mouth Robert has kept the bar open because Roberts Lafitte is one of the very few businesses that are still standing in that city of 60,000 human beings after Hurricane Ike. If you see photographs of Galveston, it looks kind of scrubbed clean. But Roberts Lafitte was left standing. It was a warning to the sinners in the bar, hallelujah. They'll get one more chance from the Almighty, and then he's going to get them. Even though he missed the drag queens in New Orleans and apparently missed the drag queens in Galveston, praise Jesus. Maybe he's just a little bit, off his game. He was doing some plumb good smiting back in them Sodom and Gomorrah days and bringing down the walls of Jericho with no ammunition or artillery, just a bunch of horn playing. Yeah, I think he's a little bit off his feed, but he give him one more chance. That's what he done. So it turns out that it was left standing. The building was flooded with about 3 feet of brackish, you know, salty water. But it receded with the storm. And they immediately got busy cleaning up, and the bar opened back up. And true to form, Roberts Lafitte offered a drag show and a Tina Turner sing-along. He said all of our customers kind of demanded it. It's their bar, and they sort of dictate what's going on. We're survivors. But it's not all Tina Turner sing-alongs and drag shows and a high old time at Roberts Lafitte. The regulars in that bar have turned into regular rescue workers. Because Roberts Lafitte has turned into a point of contact on devastated Galveston Island. If Folks have dropped off food for people in need. See, food supplies are still having a hard time getting through, and there's no electricity. People can't even shower. But gay and straight alike, folks have been heading to Robert's Lafitte. It's kind of, I guess it's kind of like a USO center in the middle of a hurricane devastation zone there on the Gulf. Brian DeLeon, a straight man, told Reuters he'd never thought of even entering Robert's Lafitte in the past, being how it was a gay bar. He said, it's more than a lifesaver. This is like the Coast Guard. These are the people who take you up out of the water and make life livable. Once I get back to work, I'm coming back here. I think I feel safe in saying that were Peter commenting on this, he would say, well, honey, don't forget your heels. What a wonderful story. Thanks, Lottie. That does help a little bit. If you, it's at Robert's Lafitte is at 2501 Avenue Q in Galveston, Texas. And I don't know if I could, I don't know if the phones still work down there, but I may try to get the gentleman on the show, or maybe Peter can get him on the show. It's a pity that it takes disaster to make people recognize the ubiquity of our humanity. But, you know, maybe, just maybe, maybe out of this, maybe gay folk, in Galveston at least, will turn out being a little bit safer than they were before from the bigots and the racists and the rednecks. Maybe the next time some redneck horse's ass drives by Robert's Lafitte back, you know, when they finally get cars back to Galveston Island and gasoline and people. Maybe the next time some redneck horse's ass drives by Robert's Lafitte in Galveston, Texas and says, look you over there. That's that fag bar where the men's dress like the women folk. Maybe whoever's in that car will knock the spit right out of his mouth and say, you dumb bastard, those people saved my life. And I don't ever want to hear that kind of filth out of your mouth again. I don't care to hear it anymore today. Don't care to hear it anymore right now. I'm a pulling over and you can just get the hell out of this car and walk. You sick bastard. And maybe the likelihood of some gender-confused individual being found beaten half to death in an alley will be decreased by a factor measured by the number of people who have been saved inside Robert's Lafitte. At least the... At least the optimistic side of me wants to think that. So we'll take a little break. It's about 4:30 past the hour. We've got 1 hour of conversation left in the program. You are more than welcome to join in. In fact, I encourage you to, because that's what this is. This is Conversation Radio. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Traveled so far, the wind in your face. You're thinking you've found the one special place where all of your dreams will walk out in line and follow the course you've made in your mind. much like you. I thought I was king and knew what to do, but everything burned and fell from my hand. I had to turn back or build a new plan. 'Cause it isn't gonna be that way. It isn't gonna be that way. No, it isn't gonna be that way. It isn't gonna be that way. Would crack and I could go through and walk out in time where no one has been. I'd come back to you and tell what I'd seen. Oh, but it isn't gonna be that way. It isn't gonna be that way. Just have to live and see what you find and take it from there and follow the signs. Yeah, you think you can live and dream your own fate. You think you can wish and walk through the gate. Oh,
tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Yes, indeedy. Yeah, I'd say we got about 55 good solid minutes of conversation left in us this evening. And if you want to direct it or talk about what we've been going on about earlier in the evening, you're welcome to do either one. And you know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, it's 304-658-3333. Either way works fine. Email rolls in to bob@headonradio.com. Could it get any easier? I don't think so.
So I wander by WD40.com every day. Our buddies Wally, Dookie, Clyde. And I see this headline. And, you know, nobody's got an eye for the potential for satire. Apart from maybe Eugene Finnerman, like these guys have. Some of these jokes just write themselves. And maybe that's part and parcel of what the... I don't know. Maybe this was just too easy. Maybe it was too much of a slam dunk. Headline! Doctors remove benign lesion from Bush's forehead. Well, hot damn, it's the only thing benign about him, and they took it out! Shoot! Maybe it could have grown and actually turned him into a human being. Okay. They couldn't resist. Just too easy. I mentioned a little bit ago that I spent yesterday evening among those folks that I refer to as the hardest working, bravest people I know. The folks from Coal River Mountain Watch at the Green Jobs and Healthy Mountains rally in Charleston. And the whole reason for their being is the devastation that you've heard me talk about on a number of occasions that mountaintop removal brings to their homes and to the homes of thousands of others around West Virginia, Virginia, Tennessee, Kentucky, in the form of mountaintop removal. And on the one hand, the mission has been to end mountaintop removal, and the other part of the mission has been to point a way and lead the way toward a sustainable, renewable future. Well, guess what? I've waited and waited and waited and waited, and mountaintop removal has finally made its way to the presidential campaign. It became a presidential campaign issue as of yesterday when John McHoover said that he supports the idea of ending mountaintop removal, not limiting it, not making it, not ending mountaintop removal. He supports the idea. Then Barack Obama came out. And he said that he has serious concerns and does not support mountaintop removal either. Well, for either of these gentlemen who might have any misgivings whatsoever, I'm speaking out of school, of course, but I'm sure that a flight over Cayford Mountain and a few other mountaintop removal sites could be arranged for them so that maybe we could clear up any misgivings they might have. John McHoover was in Florida when he said that he supports other forms of mining, but that he supports an end to mountaintop removal, and he wants the federal government to do more to control greenhouse emissions and other pollution from coal-fired power plants. That was in Florida. He would not assume it. Now, see, he's probably going to largely ignore West Virginia, too, because he knows it's apparently in his hip pocket right now, although the polling data indicates there's only a 5 percentage point difference between Obama and McHoover. He said that in Florida. He would not say it here. Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton both inside of a week were given an opportunity to say that during the primary season, and they both sort of danced around the topic. Hillary saying that she'd like to play Humpty Dumpty with the mountains and put them all back together again, and Barack Obama saying that, well, it's questionable, and he came a little closer to opposing it than Hillary did, and that's part of what had a lot to do with how I voted in the primary. The specific question asked of John McHoover was whether he supports, quote, eliminating mountaintop removal mining and practices like that. And practices like that. Kind of makes you want to add, like, you know, eliminating mountaintop removal, mining, and the practices like that. And McHoover said, you know, my friends, I do.
My friends, I'm happy to tell you that I've seen a dramatic improvement in the behavior of the coal companies. Well, there's your proof. That silly old sod has obviously never been anywhere within 20 miles of a mountaintop removal site. Because then he went on and said, my friends, they're doing a much better job. Now, it's not perfect, but it certainly is dramatically improved from what it was some years ago. No, you stupid old doofus. It's getting worse. It's getting worse. Don Blankenship and the rest of the coal thug CEOs have bitten their teeth. That's why they're itching to get blasting on Coal River Mountain. That's why. And by the way, do me a favor. Do yourself a favor. Next time you're driving by the bank, if it hasn't already had a run on it and gone broke or busted or anything, next time you're going by the bank, ask them to fish through their quarter drawer and see if they can find you a West Virginia quarter. Because if you turn it over from the obverse to the reverse, you know, the side that's not George Washington, on the West Virginia quarter, you will see a representation in relief of the New River Gorge, where I live. And you will see spanning that gorge the New River Gorge Bridge, which is the longest steel arch bridge in the Western Hemisphere, 876 feet from the deck of the bridge to the gorge to the New River below. But if you look at that representation of the New River Gorge, look on the right-hand edge of the quarter at that mountain there. Okay? And keep that quarter. Don't go putting it in a pop machine or anything or buying the gumballs with it. Keep that quarter. Hang on to that quarter. Because that quarter is the only place on Earth where that mountain on the back of that quarter still exists. Yep. The very thing that West Virginia used to define itself on the back of a piece of the coinage of the Republic is gone. How do I know? I live near it. It ain't there anymore. How do you like that, huh? Joe Lovett, who is a darn fine lawyer down at the Appalachian Center for the Economy and the Environment, said, I'm extremely pleased that John McCain recognizes that it's time to bring mountaintop removal to an end, and I can't imagine that Barack Obama won't say the same thing. This could be a very important moment for bringing to an end this practice that is so destructive to the environment of southern West Virginia, and to the lives of southern West Virginians, and to the culture of southern West Virginians. Mountaintop removal is finally in play. And I would personally welcome either one of them, and I know lots of really, really nice, friendly folks that would be more than happy to let them know what it actually means and maybe smarten up John McHoover a little bit about this bourgeois of how mountaintop removal is dramatically improved from what it was some years ago. Thanks, John. Thanks for playing. Here's your lovely parting gift, and don't forget to try the home game the next time you're sitting around somewhere. But you know what I mean. So, you know, that's a good thing. We actually exist. The Obama campaign did follow up and said, Senator, spokesman, Dan Leistikow, said, Senator Obama comes from a coal state and understands its importance to our economy. While he has serious concerns about mountaintop removal mining, he has proposed a major federal investment in clean coal technologies as part of his plan to build a new economy, saving and creating jobs in West Virginia and around the country while addressing the global climate crisis. Come on, Barack, you're better than that. I know you are. anybody who walked the mean streets of Chicago trying to address the needs of families in crisis there has got to have a little bit of compassion and a little bit of recognition that it can happen in Appalachia too. Lord God, the schizophrenic existence that I have to live. On the one hand, we started this program with a discussion of real world life here. But Lord help me. Lord help me. My people have been on this land for nigh on to 300 years. I could take you place by place by place and show you the last resting places of literally generations of my forebears. And to know that the sickness of racism pollutes some areas and some peoples of this state, that it pollutes their souls the way mountaintop removal pollutes our air, pollutes our streams, corrupts our lives, our cultures, our communities. What a dichotomy. What a dichotomy between the wonderful, heroic people that I am fortunate enough to be in contact with at Coal River Mountain Watch. What a stark difference with the benighted fools who verbally attack children and throw stuff in your driveway, hoping you'll get a flat tire and maybe you and the whole family will die. What a dichotomy. And yet, it is a West Virginia that is worth saving. It is an Appalachia that is worth saving. And frankly, the work of stopping mountaintop removal is not a work that leaves out the ignorant, the foolish, and the benighted. Granted, they may be too dumb to recognize that we're fighting for them, too. But by God, just the same, we are. So there's that. By the way, the United Mine Workers came out, Phil Smith, the UMWA, couldn't help noting that John McCain has actually not just sponsored but authored legislation that would have harmed the coal industry and the underground coal industry. He said anyone who is associated with the coal industry in Appalachia who thinks John McCain is a friend of coal is sadly mistaken. John McCain is not a Focker. But he's not the kind of person who isn't a Focker that I would want to be associated with. Oh, it has been a busy day, hasn't it? Just in case, I don't know, did you catch this? Did you catch the business with the anthrax? An acclaimed government scientist who had received the Secretary of Defense Meritorious Civilian Service Award, a government scientist by the name of Peter B. either Yarling or Jarling. He's the guy who looked at the anthrax spores after the anthrax attacks of 2001 with an electron microscope and declared that he believed that it had signs that silicon had been added to anthrax recovered from a letter addressed to Tom Daschle, and that silicon meant that it would be more buoyant in air and more capable of penetrating deeply into the lungs, and that that was proof that it had been... What? That it had been... that it had been weaponized with sophistication. Okay? Of course, the claim was that the weaponized, the sophisticated weaponization of the anthrax was a big blinking light pointing right at... Yeah, Bruce Ivins, who killed himself with a Tylenol 3 overdose, allegedly, July the 29th, because he had been targeted as the anthrax killer. Well, there's only one problem with all this. Turns out that Peter B. Jarling, has admitted that he was wrong, that the anthrax he examined had not been altered to make it more deadly. Oopsie. My bad. Oh, Bruce Ivins, sorry you're dead, buddy. In 2001, Jarling was called to brief a whole room full of folks at the White House that included none other than Attorney General John Crisco Head Ashcroft, FBI Director Robert Mueller, and Homeland Secretary Tom Ridge. And it was later reported by the Washington Post, following that high-level briefing, that the presence of the high-grade additive was confirmed for the first time by a government source familiar with the ongoing studies which are being conducted by scientists at Fort Detrick. Like I said, oopsie. Following that came out the revelation from the Bush administration that only the former Soviet Union and Iraq... Oh, in the United States, not that we're counting, are the only three nations known to have developed the kind of additives that enable anthrax spores to remain suspended in the air, making them more easily inhaled and more deadly. Yeah. Well, there's one more notch in the... Oh. Because, you know, the whole thing... Saddam Hussein done it. He done it right when he had finished writing one Arabic Harlequin romance novel, and before he started on the next one, that's when he come up with that there weaponized anthrax. Yes, he did. Makes you a little bit sick, doesn't it? Oh well, what the heck? Why bother? No big deal. And by the way, here's a fun one. Here's a fun little title. How 6,700 tons of radioactive sand from Kuwait ended up in Idaho. This is from Alternet. And that's a heck of a question. Apparently it was brought, 6,700 tons of it, from Kuwait to Longview, Washington, poisoned with depleted uranium after a fire at a military at an army base in Doha, Qatar. Or, I'm sorry, Doha in Kuwait. Mercy. This is the rationale is positively stunning. I don't know how much more of this stuff I can stand. This is what the report says. The depleted uranium
was being repatriated. No, really, repatriated. The sand was a gift of the Kuwaiti government. Wow. Getting paid in sand by the Kuwaitis? Good work if you can get it, huh? God, we haven't had stuff like this since the Flintstones went off the air. Ah, well, Mr. Slate gave me a whole bag of sand today. Go out and get the brontosaurus ribs and fire up the pit. Jiminy Christmas. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob?
Yes.
Hello?
Hello.
Oh, I can just barely hear you. This is a landline.
Okay, well, any better?
Probably at my end. Maybe there's a way to turn up the volume on this phone.
I'm tweaking knobs here as we speak.
Can you hear me?
I hear you great.
Oh, great. My name is Michael, first-time caller.
Oh, welcome to the program. Thank you for calling.
I've been listening for a couple of years. I don't do these radio calls very well. I get really nervous. I can hear Kate yelling at me about this.
Don't worry. We haven't lost a caller yet, so. Yeah.
It's weird because I'm a professor. I can get up and ad lib in front of 1,000 people, but somehow calling into a radio show freaks me out.
Well, if there's anywhere that's downright homey and comfortable, this ought to be it. So put all that aside.
I'm from out of town, like way out of town.
Okay.
I live in Guangzhou, China.
Oh, wow.
I just woke up like an hour ago, so I'm not really even thinking too clearly at this point. Not many neurons firing at this hour. I don't know how Robert does it. He must be a morning person. I definitely am not. I'm really not too sure of my name until sometime afternoon. But if I try to call, you know, when I usually listen to your podcast, like 6 o'clock at night our time, hard to call in then. Real chatty at that time of day.
You know, I'm real close to not terribly conscious about that time of day.
At when? In the morning?
Whenever you're catching me your time, I'm probably not conscious. But I'm not a morning guy either by any stretch of the imagination. I spent that week in Kentucky last week, and man, getting me to an 8 o'clock class has never been easy. But I actually dragged my butt out there and, you know, sort of sat there blinking my eyes, going, "What? Huh? I'm sorry. I'll be a better afternoon." So I understand what you're talking about.
I really want to thank you especially and all your callers. I listen to you guys every day, have been for a long time now. I think I started listening to you when Mike got fired from Air America, and I sort of went Jones on talk radio for a while. And I tried you guys out, and Bob, you are brilliant.
Well, thank you.
Conversations, especially with Riverbo or Eugene Zinnerman, especially. So cool to listen to. You guys are just soaring.
Well, I appreciate that. We'll pretend this conversation isn't taking place, or else Agnes will bring in the C-clamp and put it on my head lest it swell. But
yeah, I knew you're going to go all shucks on me.
Yeah, well, no, I'll try not to do that, but.
And your voice, I mean, just your voice, like the golden pipes of Bob Kincaid. Yeah, just your voice is really great to listen to.
Well, they're feeling a little bit better these days. I was sounding like a cross between Clint Eastwood and The Godfather a week and a half ago, and it was really beginning to bother me. So you teach there in China, Michael?
Yeah, I'm a professor here at a big university in Guangzhou called Jinan University.
For the geographically challenged, where about is Guangzhou?
Guangzhou is in the extreme southern part of China. It's in the state called Guangdong. Guangdong is about maybe half the size of California, and it's long like California. It goes east and west here in the south. about 100 kilometers to the south of here is Hong Kong.
Oh, wow.
So we're...
Well, I'm among those geographically challenged that I mentioned a minute ago, so... And I have a fascination with maps and geography and things like that, so I love because China's a pretty big place, and just to say China's like saying, well, you know, I live on Earth. So how long have you been over there?
I've been here actually last month was my 50-year anniversary.
Oh my goodness, So, as a university professor, and you said it's a large university.
About 20,000.
How are you, as an American, how are you received?
Like a rock star, just about everywhere. They love Americans. They idolize Americans. Even in the United States, who thinks the Chinese hate them or out to get them. I can sort of hear this fear in people's voice. They think the Red Army is going to be marching through America. It's just so crazy.
Well, I understand, and I try to be careful of that myself, Michael, because there is a great deal of angst here, and I share some of it, with the degree to which our economy has been sent there. But I hold no personal animus toward the people themselves, because you can make the argument that the second baby now has died from the tainted formula affair. Did I read that right?
Yep.
Are you able to access news and information there with a fair degree of clarity or I guess objectivity?
You realize how many people are listening to this conversation besides the listeners?
Well, hi. You know, you listen. You're in on the running joke. You know, Agent Fred's listening too. So, Agent Fred, meet Agent Cho. Agent Cho, this is Agent Fred.
Yeah. Bunch of people in Beijing are listening. Bunch of people in Washington, D.C. are listening. I don't have any problem getting the news. I'm in kind of a weird position here because I'm always been intensely political. Come from a really political family, sort of like the Kennedys without any money. my grandmother ran for a county commission in 1940 or something. So I'm very political and sort of a news junkie. And so I see a lot of things here that I don't really want to comment on. And the problem is not so much that I'm afraid they'll deport me back to L.A. Is the problem is more like I'm in these people's house, and I don't really want to call their baby ugly. That's not why I came here.
Exactly.
So I'm not going to be rude and say anything.
Well, there's a long and honorable tradition of Americans going to Asia, not to go and bring the marvels of American culture to Asian people, but rather to go and learn what Asian people have to teach us about our own existence. One of my favorite poets is the beat poet Gary Snyder. I don't know if you've ever read any of his stuff.
I haven't.
But he was one of the compatriots of Allen Ginsberg and Lawrence Ferlinghetti. And Jack Kerouac and that crowd, and he, you know, I think he's still with us, a brilliant scholar of Chinese literature, and it profoundly affected and impacted his poetry and out of things like that, between both studies in Japan and studies in China, I can't help but be convinced that there's a bunch there we've got to learn. So I would imagine I would imagine you learn as much from your students as they do from you, and that's certainly no insult.
And that's part of the reason I'm here is to try to change myself. I've been a Buddhist for since the hippie days, and I'm like the world's worst Buddhist. I admire this I admire Buddhism. I want to be more Buddhist-like, but I'm so L.A. I'm so type A personality. I'll just go off on people. So un-Buddhist makes me feel really crappy. So, yeah, I hope they... I really want them to teach me how to sort of calm down and be more tolerant and accepting.
But, you know, there are certain schools of Buddhism that say that, and I'm being half facetious, but half not. There are certain schools of Buddhism that say that being a bad Buddhist is sort of being a good Buddhist, aren't there? I mean, all that kill the Buddha stuff, and do you know what I'm talking about?
Not really.
I like the
theory.
Well, you know, we try to be affirming here, Michael. So if the university has 20,000 students, it must be and without me being stereotypical, it must be a fairly populous area then. Am I correct in my assumption?
I think Guangdong, as I said, the area is about half the size of California. I looked this up one time, and I think we're just about the same population as California. Guangzhou has if you look on the internet, you can see references to about 6 million people. People here tell you there are 15 million people in the city. I don't really know what the number is, but yeah, there's a...
So you shouldn't feel that out of place coming from Southern California, then?
No. There's more people here than in L.A. per square inch, that's for sure.
By the way, our news ninja Gene asks me to please inform you. He says, please tell Michael that he is not the worst Buddhist. I claim that title. So I'll leave that between you two to sort out.
I must not be willing. I mean, that's it. I'm not willing to make the changes necessary to be a better Buddhist. I guess that's it. Anyway. Interesting you brought up the beat thing. I was talking to my, one of the classes I teach here is chemistry. I was talking to my chemistry class, first day in class, and trying to talk to them about wanting to teach them creativity and thinking outside the box. And I think that's like China's number one problem in the future. And one of the girls said, and I was telling her that, I was telling them I used to be a hippie and asking them, you know what hippie is? You know what that stuff is? And one of the girls, the Chinese girls, raised her hand and said she had read On the Road. I thought, wow, that's just so amazing. And she said, and he was talking about the hippies in there. Said, yeah, well, actually, that's sort of the beat generation that came slightly before the hippies. But she was open to new ideas. Not hitting on all brains.
No, it's okay. You're doing great. I get a call like this, Michael, and I sit here in a sort of stupefied wonder that I can have a conversation with someone sitting at his desk in China. I'm living in the 21st century, but I guess I still got a little bit of a 19th century mindset. I'm blown away by this. You know, I'd love to, you know, I hope you'll email or call or whatever, you know, however you communicate. I'd love to have dispatches, and not just anything, you know, breaking newsy or anything, but just an idea of, you know, what your life is like, what life is like there in general. What university life is like here, because, you know, growing up here, you know how we define university life. Many universities in this country are life support systems for football teams, and this comes as an admission from somebody who is a diehard football fan. My beloved Mountaineers are going out to Boulder, Colorado on Thursday, and I think I'm going to wind up having to watch the game through the crack between my fingers that of my hands holding over my eyes. But you know what is university life like there?
Universities here are completely different than the U.S. They have a lot to change here before they'll start making graduates anywhere close to the quality of American universities.
Really? Now, without getting you in trouble, is that a function of the Cultural Revolution?
No. It goes back much, much farther than that. They call this the Confucian system. where all of the students coming in one class all stay together, all go through all 4 years. If one or two or three students fail or not fail, doesn't matter, they still go, which drives me nuts. And
well, doesn't that make the act of being a professor a little bit difficult? It's got to work. It's got to play hell with the grading curve.
It violates my academic ethics, yeah, regularly. And I used to really harangue these people about this. And then they sort of said, well, Michael, you're always complaining about something. After that, didn't matter what I said after that, I was sort of put on the shelf. So, I think my experience is not unique. I've read books by a foreign professor that taught at Shenzhen, which is south of here, another university, had exactly the same problems, tried to change, even get minimal changes into the university system to make it more like Western universities, completely unsuccessful.
Well, are we talking about courses of study? I mean, I think in terms of the hopelessly ubiquitous, the oldest pickup line in college bars in America, what's your major? Is it a unified course of study as well? You said everybody
yeah.
does everything. Is it geared toward a particular outcome? Engineers, doctors, pharmacists, lawyers?
Yeah, they have majors. It's just that they don't pay any attention to prerequisites, and they talk about them being on a credit system, but they're not really on a credit system. The students don't really choose the courses, or pretty limited in the courses they can choose.
What's the admission process?
They have to, not very many students actually are allowed to go. Not very many high school students are allowed to go to the university. There's this huge test they have to take at the end of their high school, which determines which ones go to university, which ones don't. One test your whole life, depending on one test. So all these people have made it through that test that get to university level. They have permission.
So is it a centralized form such that is there a hierarchy? Is there a Harvard as opposed to a podunk community college within the system?
Yeah, there's can't remember the name of it. But the best university is in Beijing. I wish I could tell you the name. The one I remember in Shanghai is called Jiao Tong. It's a fantastic university. I suspect they have exactly the same kind of curriculum structure problems that we have in Jinan. You know, Chinese haven't, the mainland Chinese have never been granted a Nobel Prize. And there's a whole thing about that. Everybody's waiting for China's first Nobel Prize. Now, there have been American-born Chinese that have won Nobel Prize, but none doing the research in the mainland. And there's sort of a Nobel watch waiting for China to get its first Nobel Prize. And the thought is that it's not even going to come. When it comes, it's not going to be in science. It's going to be in literature. So they have a long way to go. They don't have a lot of respect for the Nobel Prize. They have kind of an attitude about the Nobel Prize, which is hard to take, hard for me to see.
Well, it's
they started their own Nobel Prize in Hong Kong called the I can't remember the name of it.
Well, Michael, I hope tickled to know that you're drawing in commentary. You conjured Robert. In Japan, there in Kitakyushu. He just wrote in to say greetings from Japan. He said, I tried calling a bit earlier, but I had to run. I'll try tomorrow to discuss my trip to Disney World and some labor issues that I encountered. He just came back to country, and he said, and my own reverse culture shock. He said, I'm enjoying your caller, but there are very few. See, look at the reinforcement you get, Michael. There are very few good Buddhists, the ones that avoid meat-eating, liquor, and women. He said, the Japanese don't really try. They marry in Shinto shrines and only go to the temple on New Year's Day and when they die. He said, so your caller, Michael, is in good company, as there are very few good Buddhists, very few good Christians. Didn't Christ even say, don't call me good, and so on, and so on. He said, getting a little bit cloudy there in Kitakyushu as the typhoon's on the way. So I appreciate you conjuring Robert for us.
I really enjoy hearing Robert. I have to throw out some shouts to my favorites on your show. Besides you, you could be making so much money instead of doing this hobby.
Well, you know, hide not thy light under a bushel, Michael. For heaven's sakes, tell me where the big bucks are, and I'm on the way. But no, I'm kidding.
Beautiful voice, brilliant, well-educated, and you're struggling along. I'm being facetious, of course. I so thoroughly support what you're doing, what you're trying to do.
I know, but everybody's always joking when they talk about the big money I'm going to make, so, you know, I get it.
people that I really like hearing are Juanita. Just to hear Juanita's voice in the room just kind of calms me down. And then she actually understands politics on top of that. It's so cool. I love Juanita. The black lady.
Sandra?
Sandra.
Sandra, yeah.
Sandra. I love Sandra, too. So wonderful to hear Sandra's perspective. It makes me feel so bad that I don't have a black friend. You know, never had a black friend, and I want one.
I think you've got a bunch now. In the form of the folks who share their time here at the Horn. That's the beautiful thing about this little thing that we got started. The Horn, Michael, turned into something that I don't think Wayne or Agnes or I or John or Peter. Or Guy, or the Gene, Susan, ELO, Lottie, anybody, oh golly, I hope I haven't left any names out, ever dreamed that it might be, because it's become this cross-cultural, cross-global, cross-economic ties, multi-geographic thing. You know, it blows my mind. Like I said, every day it blows my mind to know that I get to crawl behind this microphone and engage in these conversations. There's no way terrestrial radio stations, you know what, some guy working for some 50,000 watt blowtorch in Cincinnati or anywhere else can frankly go up a rope for all I care, because he can't do this.
You know, you've got a 100 gigawatt blowtorch just with your intellect and the people you're calling. It's too bad, you know, and this is actually what got me off the dime to call you this morning. Last night, it's like I got punched in the stomach when I realized that there was this no-fly zone over Galveston. Randy Rhodes would say, "No, they didn't."
Yeah, they did.
They did. And no one's saying anything about that. I looked on Google News this morning, nothing. I looked on DU this morning, nothing. This is stunning to me. It just took my breath away. I couldn't believe it.
But that's what, Michael, that's what you get out of people who take what I call the Tinkerbell approach to government. You know, it's not just faith-based initiatives here and there to save the little snowflake babies and make sure that we all get to say the Pledge of Allegiance, before class, before lunch, and salute the flag every time we turn around. That's not all there is to the faith-based initiatives. The faith-based initiatives are really a description of how these people view the functions of government. And hence, if there are bodies floating in the water in Galveston, Texas, as long as they don't believe it, they're not there. Like that. They just disappear. You know, now it extends west to Galveston. Of course, we don't care about Mexico. But the entire Gulf Coast has been practically disappeared by the Bush administration.
Yeah. And I don't think there should be any doubt in anybody's mind at this point, at least in the people who know about what happened with the no-fly zone. I don't know. I'm not sure that many people know that yet. There shouldn't be any doubt in the people who know this why we haven't been allowed to see the bodies returning from Iraq. Now, it has nothing to do with respect to the soldiers thing.
No, no.
It's all news control. Always has been. That's always what it's been about. It, and they're showing their hand right now.
And that's, Michael, just for the benefit of anybody else who might be listening over that way, that's why I have a hard time holding up this present government as any sort of intellectual or moral justicial or any other kind of superior standard as compared to any other government on Earth.
You got it. It's like China to me. Looks like China to me.
Well, 99% of the Bush administration's activities have been either culled from Goebbels' playbook propaganda-wise, or have come and media-wise have come straight out of the operations manuals for Pravda and TASS.
But you know what, Bob? The snakes will always be snakes. There's always people waiting in the wing to do this. It's the American people that let this happen. It's not Bush. Evil people are evil people. I'm letting the complacent Americans.
Yeah, it's that old maxim that all that is necessary for evil to triumph is for good people to do nothing.
Right, and the quote about being eternally vigilant. No one's being eternally vigilant except for us. Well, I'm sure that put me on the no-fly list. Be a long time before.
Well, you know, there used to be an old saying, Michael, about taking a slow boat to China. You may find yourself on a slow boat from it.
Listen, I'll let you go. It's close to the end. It was a great pleasure talking to you.
Michael, this was an absolute joy. I hope you will call back in anytime you feel like it. I know folks love hearing from you. And like I said, you know, if you just want to get up at the some insane hour of the morning sometime and do a little travel log here and there, we'd love to hear that.
Okay.
All right. Take care, Michael. What a
take
joy
care.
This was to hear from you.
All right.
Bye now.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
From Guangzhou, China, Michael. And wow. There's not much left, but wow. I guess where a lot of this technology is concerned, I still have the feelings about the technology and the communications of possibilities that children have about Christmas and the potential that that day represents. We're trying to do the best that we can with, and that's not an excuse, it's just a statement of fact, we're doing the best that we can with this technology and with the marvels that it presents and it creates. And if the notes that I get and the comments that I get are any indication, you agree that it's worth doing and you agree that it means something to you. And I can never express broadly or plainly or thoroughly enough what that means to us. And that's not the royal us. That's everybody involved with the Head On Radio Network. I stand in amazement and I stand humbled. And it's the good kind of humbling. And I thank you all so much for joining me and everyone else on the horn every night. Thank you for putting up with both Agnes and me in the first portion of the program. This is another one of those moments where you make our lives easier and saner and somehow a little bit more comprehensible. So that's it for tonight.